Good afternoon. We're back here at EMS Expo in Las Vegas and the Physio Control ProMed Network podcast booth. And I said all that without messing it up. We call this the Disaster Podcast, but I love human interest stories. And I met this guy some years ago, and then later on I saw his name again, attached to a wonderful article about his life and things he has overcome and how he built a business. And you can see he's a pretty young guy, Jonathan Feit. And I want you to tell us about your fascinating life. And he has Tourette's, which I know very little about, and he's going to tell us a little bit. And that's the part he's overcome, and I really appreciate. He just said, I'm moving on with my life and becoming who I want to be. And you're a husband and a father, and let's hear about that.
New father, so
yes.
Hi, Hunter.
How old is he?
He's about 10 weeks. So he's not going to be seeing this
we'll
for a while.
We'll have to save this for him.
Yeah. It sounds good. It's technology and archivals. Let me just preface on the, I'm happy to talk about Tourette syndrome and what it's like growing up. And actually, it's been very, very interesting working in a industry that where what folks see on the line is sometimes incredibly severe. I'm not even talking about disasters and trauma. I'm talking about going into people's homes where kids are being neglected, where patients may be mentally ill. What I have is easy compared to that. To me, it's really been less about overcoming, per se, than about using it as a fuel to recognize that everybody's got something. You know, I used to describe as everybody has a cross to bear of some kind or another. This is mine, and the upside of, maybe the upside, depending on, I guess, what side of that discussion you're on, is that I can speak, and I have command of language to the point where other folks who may have this same condition get very shy and very self-conscious about themselves, and the self-consciousness gene has been excised from my body for a while. I've taken it upon myself to sort of see that as everyone's got something, and if we can help a little bit and learn from what we've experienced, then hopefully
we will. So you didn't get diagnosed until you were 19, but you had some symptoms that not a lot of people understood, apparently.
Yeah, so my history as a Tourette probably started when I was a kid. It is a genetic condition. It is in my family. I have a cousin who's genetic as well, who is Tourette as well. Yeah, it's a matrilineal descent, so my mother is a carrier, so it's from that side of the family. When I was a child, I exhibited, now in hindsight, very classic symptoms of Tourette syndrome, both physical manifestations and behavioral manifestations. And it's one of the biggest challenges in dealing with conditions like this, also related conditions of ADD, OCD, schizophrenia, it's a very fine line between being a kid or being creative, for example, or having a weird muscular something, and a disorder, right? And that brand at the end can be crippling for some people.
Yes.
Sorry about that. So for me, it's been very much about having a support network. I love my family. They've been great. There are moments when they probably could have done differently. And again, in hindsight, thinking about the doctors that I went to as a kid, for example, one of them was a certifiable quack who should have been arrested for some of what he did to me.
Wow.
And I don't mean abuse in that regard, but he experimented on me, and quite blatantly. I was on medications like clonidine and anaphronil that some folks listening to this might understand. Clonidine is a blood pressure management medication that is generally prescribed for geriatrics. I was on that when I was 9. I was given Ritalin for years because people thought I had, someone somewhere thought I had attention deficit. The last thing you want to give a Tourette is amphetamines. I focused really, really well, but I couldn't stop moving because it's a neuromuscular condition.
Right.
You just sped up my metabolism.
So if you don't know what it is, let's throw a drug at it and see if it works.
Pretty much. But I remember at one point, once I started to understand more about what this condition was, sitting down with the doctor in a session that was quasi-therapy or something, and asking, what are you doing? And this doctor is an unfortunate reality, and it was done, in confidence, where it was me and him, and my parents weren't there, and they didn't know about it. It's a it's a one-on-one type discussion.
Wow.
He described that he had a serotonin reuptake theory that he was basically testing out on me. And this individual should be arrested for having done that. I won't say his name. I certainly could.
Probably not. Yeah.
Well,
got a good idea.
But it was a remarkable thing. Anyway, fast forward about 10 years, or you know, maybe half a decade, and I was working at Johns Hopkins University. I actually was working in the neuromuscular lab on epilepsy patients. Ironically enough, in my line of sight, the Epilepsy Foundation has a booth right there.
Yes, they are, right over there.
So that was working for an epileptologist. My background is in experimental psychologies and neurology, so things like Tourette syndrome and epilepsy.
That's interesting.
And thank you. Basically, I'm working in this lab. I'm working with everything from GABA to running gels and doing all the hardcore lab stuff and working with these epileptic patients. And I actually, it's my first editorial credit. I know you mentioned about media. I actually co-authored a chapter about concurrent diseases with
you
epilepsy.
Are a smart guy.
I was 19 years old. That was a prideful moment
19.
For me.
19.
I did.
Wow.
And then I walked one day out in the hallway, and the guy who was sitting in the, who was working in the next lab, was an MD-PhD, who at the time, I was told, incredibly brilliant, but the PhD part takes away from some of the bedside manner. Let's just say it's a research orientation. And I remember there's this fellow, it's been a couple weeks that I was there, and he walks up to me one day and goes, "You have Tourette syndrome." And I said, No, I don't. I remember actually getting really upset about it. I mean, it's sort of like someone branding you a diabetic or a cancer patient or whatever. You know, you just told me that I have this genetic disorder that I'll never be able to get rid of because I'm 19, I'm post-puberty, so if I have it now, it's going to be there forever. It's a pretty nasty thing to find out in the hallway. So I was pretty disturbed. I went and spoke with my advisor. He's a very dear friend. His name is Yehuda Sipkuti. He's now at the Swedish Institute in Seattle. Brilliant, amazing physician. And he says, "You know the symptoms as well as I do. I mean, I had been studying these things for a long time. And the symptoms all matched, and it fit. And it just so happened that the country's foremost expert on pediatric Tourette syndrome is a gentleman, Harvey Singer, at Johns Hopkins.
Wow.
So he fast-tracked. This guy waits, you know, wait times of months to get an appointment. But because I was there, they fast-tracked me in. 30 minutes after the appointment, is, you know as well as I do what you have. So he prescribed me 10X was the drug. It's guafenazine, I believe, is the generic name. And I took it for 2 months, something like that. It affected my brain. And it was great. It was exactly what I needed. And it slowed, I mean, it's a Haldol, it's from the Haldol family. And it affected my ability to think and slowed me down. If all it is I have neuromuscular effects, and I'll explain it to people, but I'm not having anything in my body that affects my ability to think.
You were working in a neuromuscular area without even realizing you had the neuromuscular disease.
I didn't have it specifically. Yeah, it was probably more subconscious than that. I imagine I knew that I had something. It's the idea of being drawn into a specific direction. I mean, I was very consciously drawn into these types of, or towards these types of conditions, I guess, for lack of a better phrase, because I identified with them. This is something that affects me. I don't really know what it is, but I know there are other people who have. And my master's degree, my first two degrees, are in psychology, religion, and conflict negotiation, which, interestingly, the first two, the last part leave aside, but the psychology and religion part, I actually largely focused on things like stigmata and religious experiences, psychosis, what was called psychosis, auras before epilepsy, for example, this sense that something is happening, that before we had the scientific grounding of what that halo effect was, an aura effect was, or other, even schizoid effects. Some of these were the way people viewed the world, and they attributed them to something they didn't understand. But that fascinated me.
I can see that happening.
Because something was happening to me, and if you took my body and my writhing, for example, and when I get tired, my body tends to move very strangely sometimes, and you take that 200 years ago, before we understood the brain, I would have called possessed. Right? People would have thought that,
right.
You know, and
so
whatever it is. And actually, when you look at the stories of the old witch hunts and whatnot, there is often something of that, or a person who's a hunchback, or whatever it is, and there was this sense
anything
of unknown.
That's not normal.
Exactly. Right. Well, what's been interesting, and you mentioned the article that was written about me in Inc. magazine, it was the first time that I ever publicized what has become sort of a guiding principle for me. The concept of the X-Men, you know, this comic book character. But these are all people with something weird about them. We don't celebrate that very well in this country. We do aspire for a normal, but a normal is nonsense. Everybody who's in this room, we're at an EMS conference where people are okay with the idea of running into scenarios that their fight or flight instinct should be saying go that way, not go that way. It's funny with the religious side of my training. I have discussed the Bible more in the last 6 years that I've been in this business than I did in my graduate work leading up to it, because there is a remarkable amount of faith that goes into what people do in this room. They're very faithful and very devoted people, both to their work, to the community, to whatever their religious affiliation is. And so going back to this idea of the X-Man, it's a comic book figure, this band of weird people who get together to save the day. And I thought that was awesome. So in that article, it was the first time I ever sort of said it publicly, but it inspired me, not to be a superhero per se, but the idea that we all have something.
We do.
And if we leverage that
but
something.
But some is more physically obvious than what others.
Of course.
And
that's where a sense of sensitivity to diversity comes in. My business partner is a husky fellow, shall we say. He's over in our booth. Chris is about 300 pounds. And it's, we've had some interesting conversations, half in jest, about the fact that if we ever find ourselves in a new ice age, he's going to last a lot longer than I will.
Well, I'm good.
Yeah.
Works
but,
for me.
But if you put some, you know, it's an interesting thing, because we as an industry, as a country, we like to put people into buckets. And rather than looking at someone and saying, you know what? And from the youngest days, from the days that you're a child, you know, choose a major in college. 18, 19, 17 years old, I may not yet know what I'm good at. It's one thing British do very, very well. I'm going to see what you're good at. I'm going to put you in that line. And if you want to find something else, you can, but this is what you gravitate to. And we make people make decisions about the rest of their lives when they don't necessarily know their gift. I found out my condition when I was already in college. If I had known what I had when I was 16, maybe I would have gone to a different school program. I might be in a different career. I ended up going into the military. That was a trip for a Tourette to do. I joined the Army on September 11th.
And they didn't have a problem with it.
They did. They had a huge problem with it. I had to get very high up waivers, specifically exonerating the military if I died.
Well, good for you for pushing through on that.
Thank you. I did. It was a prideful moment, and it turns out probably not the best place for me.
But you wanted to find out, and you did.
And I did. And the moment that I left was, well, it turns out that being a Tourette and sleeping 4 hours a night and getting yelled at by a drill sergeant this far from your face, probably not great for folks with a nervous disorder.
Good point.
But it was it was interesting that I could handle almost everything, actually. I ended up having the fastest run time in my platoon, which, if you can see, camera adds 10 pounds, I probably don't need it. but I pushed through it. I had something to prove to myself, to my family, to people who said I wouldn't, to the military. I could accommodate for a shoulder twitch that I developed in handling a rifle, not a problem. But there was one day that we were doing a bayonet run in the forest. This was at Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, and my eye twitched. And it happens all the time. You probably see it on camera now, but I was acutely aware that if I slipped because of that, if I hit a rock, if I missed something, I could knife the person in front of me in the back of the neck with a bayonet that was 6 inches long. And so I requested to transfer out, because at that point this was not about me proving anything anymore. I'd done it.
Safety issue.
It really is. And again, I think that's where we have to acknowledge that for that, everybody's got their thing. And if you can leverage that to some measure of success, whatever that is, familial, financial, social, whatever it is, it's happening. happy. You end up in a happy place. You find a strength. But if you try to jam yourself into some place that, quite frankly, you don't fit genetically, or you don't fit because you don't like it, but you feel you have to do it, or your family tries to send you to med school, but you don't really want to do that, you're not going to do well.
Well, our long time's story. Actually winding down, and I'd love to talk to you for hours, so we're going to have some more podcasts, but I want you to talk a little about your business, because that's something that you did achieve, and it's a huge achievement, and I want to let people know about that.
I appreciate it. So Beyond Lucid Technologies is the company, We were born out of not only my experience, I was actually training in the military to be a field medic, so got a chance to see what folks in the most stressful environments don't have when it comes to patient care. So we designed our software for full offline operation in rural environments, earthquakes, tornadoes, and hurricanes.
There's our disaster link.
Indeed. By the other token, I mentioned Chris. His father and sister were killed out in the Four Corners of New Mexico, side about 8 years ago. So when, you know, that's really the combination of my military interest and his very real world on the ground experience really got us looking at the process by which information is conveyed from the scene, the disaster, the MCI, the patient's bedside, and communicated across that link. And so that's where we put our focus. We don't refer to ourselves anymore as an EPCR. EPCRs are a dime a dozen. Certainly in this room, there are several vendors that do patient care records. It's very much a commodity. Our business has come down to what you do with that information. So the idea of handing it off to a care facility, handing it off back to station, handing it to another provider, connecting those dots in the manner of a pre-hospital health information exchange, we see as the embodiment of EMS 2020, it's called. And we've been asking for a while, why not EMS 2015? Why not EMS 2016? So that's what we've been doing. We have some news I'll be happy to announce on your show here for the first time. Actually, just released this morning. There's an organization called Commonwell, which is essentially a collaborative, now 33 members, but founded by the largest electronic health records systems in the country, Cerner, Allscripts, Athena Health, McKesson, very, very big names. Announced this morning, but as of last month, we are the first EMS organization to join that group. This is the concept of the patient identifier. So the idea that you could be in the ambulance en route to a facility using any of those electronic health record systems, and you can move data to and from those records. So look you up, know your history, know your next of kin, have some insurance information, and do that all from the patient's side. So that just happened. We're very excited to get Beyond Lucid Technologies. The system is called MetaView. I thank you certainly for having me here to talk too much about my own personal background.
No, that's what I wanted. I think that's a fascinating story. And it shows that, like you said, we all have challenges. Some are more visible than others, but it's a matter of, are you going to let it hold you down, or are you going to say, I'm moving forward with my life, and I'm going to go out and do good things.
And find a passion.
It's finding your passion. And maybe it wasn't the military, but you know, sometimes you got
to
just...
And we found a way to touch in that.
Find your way to get there.
Well, the military is a partner client of ours now, so we found a way to give back.
So that experience did work. You know, it helped you.
It changed
my life. If they want to find out more about Beyond Lucid Technologies or you, where would they find you?
So if you're here at the show, booth 567. If you're online, www.beyondlucid.com. That's not to be confused with Lucent, which happens all the time. It's BEYONDLUCID.com.
Excellent. Well, we're going to have to find opportunity to talk some more, because you are fascinating.
Well,
and like Carissa said, you're a smart guy.
Well, I owe a lot to the people who taught us stuff.
This is a lot more fun than doing an audio podcast, because we can sit down and talk.
Thank you.
I've enjoyed this a lot.
But we are not too far from each other back home, so we should try to get
there. We're very close, actually. We will be talking. So we have to end this, unfortunately, the disaster podcast here in the Physio Control booth with our sponsor, Paragon Medical Education. We appreciate them very much, without either of which we would not be here. So we appreciate that. If you want to get a hold of us, Sam Bradley, SamBradley11 at most social media outlets, and certainly disasterpodcast.com. If you have questions for Jonathan that you don't want to pose directly, you can reach him through our podcast, and we'll make sure he gets the information and the link to get back to you. So we will wrap this up with what we always say about disaster. Disaster medicine is not your everyday medicine.